Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know at BBM, Bummer Bit Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. So once a week, we catch up with the ladies from Marawa Law, and we've got Fern on the line. Fern, a very good morning. How are you, sister?
I'm well, thanks, Trev. How about you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. And congratulations are in order. Congratulations in regard to your degree. Lawyer, there it is. Represent.
Thank you. Yes, finally. Baby lawyer, I like to call myself.
You got your huggies on, Kimby's on, and still doing baby steps, but enjoying that journey, yes?
Yeah, thank you. I will.
Fantastic. Look, I remember Leah and I did a National Talkback yarn a few weeks ago going through what domestic violence is, and in that segment we talked about DVO and what is DVO. So I just thought I'd bring you to the table and talk about that. So what is DVO?
Well, we thought it'd be a good idea to go through the actual process because Leah just sort of talked about what domestic violence was, but it can be really daunting if you don't know what the process actually is to do it. So it's a DVO, is a domestic violence order, sometimes called a protection order. Mm. It's a process that police and courts use to deal with domestic and family violence in Queensland. So how it works is that if a person known as the aggrieved thinks that another person, who is known as a respondent, has committed domestic violence against them, they can go to their local magistrate's court and apply for a domestic violence order, or DVO.
So if that happens, then the police can charge?
Sorry?
The police can charge?
Yeah, well, the police can apply in place of the aggrieved person, and then the police are referred to as the applicant.
Okay, what do you... On so, behalf of the victim, so to speak, the aggrieved person.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not actually a police charge.
Okay.
So, because if police charge you with an offence, then that charge has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Okay.
So that's a really high standard of proof and can be quite difficult to prove in domestic violence situations or in almost any situation that occurs sort of away from the public eye.
Mm.
And whereas a DVO is a civil court process, and civil court processes they have like a lower standard of proof. It's called the balance of probabilities, which is just a fancy way of saying the applicant only has to prove that it's more likely than not to have occurred or to have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So they say that having initial domestic violence actions begin in this way is supposed to ensure that the maximum amount of people get protection in the shortest amount of time. they have domestic violence court once a week as well to try and process as many people as possible.
Mm.
So,
which is sad to say. What you're saying is it's the numbers are high across the nation, isn't it?
They are massive across the nation. They're really quite shameful in a lot of ways.
Shameful, exactly. If someone gets a standard conditions, DVO, in place against their partner, or they have one in place for them, does that mean they can't have any contact with the other person? And as in if they live together, they will have to move out? Is that the case?
No, it's not. It's a great question because I think this is one of the very, very, very confusing things about the DVO process. So the standard condition, which is the condition of to be of good behaviour and not commit acts of domestic violence, it's more like being on a warning. That's if that's all you have on the DVO. You can get other conditions, but mm-hmm. we're not going into those. This is if you just have the standard conditions. It's sort of similar to like a probation type scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just wanting to be on good behaviour. So sure. all the persons involved, as long as it is only standard conditions, can still continue to live together, be together, see each other, you know,
okay.
play soccer, do whatever they want.
What if the DVO is in place for about 5 years, domestic violence occurs in that time?
So that's what is referred to as a breach. And if there's sufficient evidence of a breach, then the police can charge the respondent. And if this happens, that is finally a criminal charge. And it will need to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Mm. Often the DVO, and if any letter or advice that you get when you get a DVO against someone or one against you, there's... Usually comes with sort of some information to say if you are an aggrieved, you're advised to keep a record of any interaction between you and the respondent.
Mm-hmm.
So, because if there is a breach of the DVO, the police may need to use that as evidence in any criminal charge.
Sure. It's still an uneasy situation, isn't it, for the victim in this case? I mean, the respondent is still living with the person, and if nothing has been done regarding fixing the situation regarding the mental capacity or the anger issue with the respondent, then it still sort of lies dormant until an argument or disagreement flares up again, yeah?
Yeah, well, that's the argument sort of with why, you know, there's a lot of sort of argument around the fact that these processes are not working very well because of that exact reason, that it's not actually sort of addressing the issues that are occurring in, like, within relationships or where domestic violence or family violence does occur.
Mm, exactly.
So it's one of those situations that they're basically... going, well, we don't know how else to deal with it, you know, because it happens all the time. And I mean, yeah, don't get me into the the reasons why.
Yeah, I know.
Because we could be here all night.
Exactly. Thank you. And as a lawyer, and I can say that heartily, because yes, you are qualified. As a lawyer, you virtually just got, well, we all got to abide by the rules that are in place and stay within the guidelines, so to speak. You know, and if the law is the law, then so be it. If the respondent is allowed to stay with the victim, so to speak, then it is what it is, and they just need to work in that space, that confined space, and hope to come out of the end of it with sunshine, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I mean, also, Trev, there is the thing that when there has been, like, reoccurring domestic violence or, you know, or there is an incident that is just really, like, really horrible, there usually ends up being other conditions that are on their CBO, you know, like, can't actually contact the respondent can't actually even contact the aggrieved or can't write them in any way, like on social media or anything like that. And so if they do any of those things, that's a breach then.
Sure.
But in those circumstances, obviously, the respondent and the aggrieved cannot live together.
Sure, okay. So if someone you know, to our listeners out there involved in a situation, who can they contact? Where do they go regarding domestic violence, sister?
Okay, so... it really depends on who, on the situation that's happening around the time that you want to get in contact with someone.
Mm.
So if it's an emergency, as in the domestic violence is actually occurring, then call 000 and ask for the police.
Okay.
Mob can call an organisation that deals with information and counselling side of things, as well as giving you free legal advice. They're called the Queensland Indigenous Family Violence Legal Service, or QIPLS.
Yep.
They offer services focused on supporting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to live free from family violence and or sexual assault in Queensland. They've got a free call number, and it's 1-800-887700.
Okay, that's the QIPLS. The number again, 1-800-887700.
That's it. And remember, it's not free from mobile. If you missed that, you can just go online and just look up that acronym, the QIFVLS, and all their contact details will come up.
Okay, quivels.com.au. Yep, fantastic.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. So, and if you want just general advice, counselling, financial assistance, etc., Also, if you're a respondent, cripples don't generally talk to respondents, so it'll only be an aggrieved person. So if you're a respondent, you can contact, and it's not an emergency situation, obviously, then you can also call the Cairns Regional Domestic Violence Service.
For the Cairns region, yep.
Cairns Regional Domestic Violence Service on 403-36100. So that's 403-36100. Or, again, you can look them up, but they're just under dvcairns.org.
All right, that's for the Cairns mob. Yep, fantastic. Thank you.
That's all the... Well, also, lovely. If you need some commercial or native title advice...
Murra Law, please, yes. Who's Murra Law?
Murra Law. You can call us on 4041-3088. You can get more information from all the stuff that I've spoken about or any legal problem from your local law society as well. And here in Cairns, it is the Queensland Law Society. Sorry, all over Queensland, it's Queensland Law Society. And their number is 1300-367-757. And also remember, we've still got the some pro bono support specifically relating to Indigenous businesses. Mm-hmm. We're offering it at Marawa Law.
Lovely.
So if you are an Indigenous business owner, just pop onto the website and register your details on a pop-up tile.
Fantastic, Murra Law. Too Deadly Fern, thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you, sister lawyer. You are. Thank you very much. You're deadly. And all the best to your family. Look, you stay safe and we'll be in touch, sister.
You too, Trev. Thank you.
Bye, Fern.
Bye-bye.
A deadly yarn there with Fern Newcomb, her name is. She's with Murra Law. And look, fantastic. Just succeeded in regarding her degree. And working closely with Leah Cameron, Murra Law, and the Deadly team at Murra Law, based in Cairns, Townsville, and Brisbane. Too Deadly, have you say your mob here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Yarning with the Bully One, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know, BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. 1-800-422-416, give me a call.
But the stories tell me who I am. There is truth in the words they spoke. It's not a tale, it's not a joke. These words tell me why I am.
Too Deadly, that's Lex and Solomon, and I Belong, and we all belong here on your daily program. That's National Talk Black. Give me a call, 1-800-422-416. Call that number, Yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumblebrook Media, 98.7 FM, and we go via NERS, National Digital Radio Service. So have you saying Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. All right, now we are living in a different world thanks to COVID-19. The world has turned upside down, but it's about adapting to what's happening. But look, some people feel as though the adapting is not helping in regard to the government space. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Bianca Hazelman, and she's the founder and CEO of Financier Women's Index, and talking about the progress hit by early impact of COVID-19. On the line, Bianca, very good morning. How are you?
Good, good. Good to be with you and on your program.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming to the program. Where are you based, Bianca?
I'm based Northern Rivers, New South Wales.
All right, beautiful. Now, we are living in an upside-down world in regarding COVID-19. You're the founder and CEO of Financier Women's Index. First of all, explain who you mob are and what you do there. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm a journalist by trade. I write about women's money issues. My background is in financial journalism, and I just made the decision to focus on women because I've got three little girls, and always kind of wondering, well, what does the future hold? What kind of nuggets of information can I pass on to younger generations to help help girls, to help women, and to help families ultimately? So I created the Finance Women's Index in 2017, and it's now, if you're going to think of the index as anything, just think of it as a scorecard which measures the financial progress of women relative to men every quarter. And we do that by looking at what women study in terms of tertiary education, what careers they go into, their participation in the workforce, what their pay looks like, superannuation and leadership, and pulling all that data together to get one end of the day number that tells us, well, women are either going forward or backwards in terms of all of those dynamics each quarter. And so what we got in the last index that was out on last Monday was that we know that women have progressed a little bit more this year, but it's at a rate that has not been seen for the start of a calendar year since 2015. And that's significant when you consider such a push towards female empowerment, financial literacy, all these different things we've seen over the last few years in particular, to kind of be back in time because of COVID and the increased joblessness is a real worry.
Look, pre-COVID-19, look, it's great to hear that your organisation, your company, this movement is operating, is fantastic. But it's sad as well. We're talking the 21st century, and women haven't got the same equal rights as men, and this is not a man's world. And I vouch for that, my sister.
Yeah, it's really tricky. And I suppose with the Women's Index, it's not a matter of just reporting on women to do better than men. It's not that. It's the belief that if we can help women lift, then we can actually help families. We can help men who might not want to. I don't know about you, but I grew up in a home where I never saw my dad because he was always at work. You know, so what if you have both couples able to work, or the father wants to be more of a part-time
and share
dad.
The workload.
Share the workload. So if we can all lift together, and if we can find the opportunity to help women do so, the hope is we can help families and help future generations.
Well, there's no I in team, is there? You know what I mean? We've got to get it together. It takes a community to raise a child, and that's mum and dad at the table, so to speak.
That's definitely right. Now, I've been looking at joblessness, unemployment rates for the Northern Territory, and it does really worry me, you know, statistically, when we look at that compared to other states. Is that something that many people are ringing in with? This is something that that I'm worried about at this point in time, particularly when we look at the numbers that are showing us that women seem to be worse affected than men for whatever reason, because of the industries they're working in, tourism, hospitality. A lot of these are dominated by women in part-time casual roles. So we're statistically seeing more women affected, but you know that could well change. Things are changing very rapidly, but I'm very curious to know if you've got people ringing in talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, not in the gender sense. I mean, everyone's struggling regarding the world upside down, job-wise, finance-wise, health-wise, mental-wise, you know, in regard to COVID-19, but not in the gender sense. But, you would have, well, more concern and more focus on the gender sense in the space that you're working in. But it's sad that there is a difference in regard to pay, in regarding leadership and to women to men, and I just think it stinks in that sense.
Yes, it is. It is something that's a real problem, and the biggest worry with COVID is if we have this disparity appearing to worsen now because of the industries that are being hit and reduced income and opportunities, it's the long-term impact. Sure. And what we've been measuring with the Women's Index is it's actually been improving in recent years, and sentiment probably has picked up on that a lot. We're feeling like things are getting a little better, a bit more.
But COVID-19 could put you in a backward step, so to speak. It'll take you back a couple of steps.
Yes, and that's what it's looking like. Even data was out again this week showing that there are still more female job cuts. It's happening all the time. So it's kind of hammering home that this disparity. And my fear is, well, what does that mean for who's worst affected? So we know that younger women and older women over 55 are the hardest hit in terms of the demographics. I mean, I know from my mother's just unfortunately lost her job, so she's in that over 55s. And what the latest job statistics are coming out suggesting is that many people are not getting back into the workforce, not feeling like they're able. And when you're a little bit older, it certainly affects your mental health. You look at the opportunities out there, you worry about, you know, you look at, do you have enough food and all these different considerations. It is a real worry. And I hate being so overly pessimistic, but if we don't talk about it, we can't put, you know, we can't then talk about how we can possibly address it. But it is a real worry at this point in time, the long-term ramifications of it all.
Well, look, we need to look for this fantastic organisation that you're heading up. We need you guys in at the table, so to speak, and regarding the massage of going into the future post COVID-19, you know, and making things right equally, men and women. So, you know, it's very important that you are there. So you are behind the eight ball thanks to COVID-19, yep.
Yeah, definitely. Can I share with you just a few tips that could help people, regardless of gender, right? I think, first and foremost, at this point in time, it's really important to... I think mental health is critical right now, and I know some people are saying we're talking too much about it, maybe we're not talking enough. It's good to know that the government is trying to get us back, businesses back up and running. That's what we need to see happen when it comes to those job opportunities. We need to be moving again. We need to be mindful of the health risk and managing that, but we need to get us moving again. So that seems like it's happening. So take note of that. I think that's a good thing. You know, then there's all this government assistance that is out there. We are hearing, you know, could things be cut off early, like your JobKeeper, like your job seeker? Well, we don't know that yet.
Sure.
So make the most of what is there. These payments that are there that can help you in any which way, help you and your families manage, get onto that, get support if you need to, get using the systems. I even admit myself that when I first looked at it, I was like, okay, how do I navigate this? But just spending a bit of time and you can figure it out. Calling some help if you need it. Find out what you're eligible for. Then there's this accessing your super early.
Yes.
Now, if you can't afford to put food on the table, this is really something to be looking at. And I certainly don't subscribe to people that are saying don't touch your super for retirement. I get that.
Sure.
But when you can't afford to eat
to live now,
that's there. You need to look at other things, right? That said, if you're spending it on stuff that's not really for, you know, living day to day and all that, you know, you're buying a boat or whatnot. Let's hope that's not kind of going on, but it could be. You kind of need to think about that if that really is what you know, in case things do get worse.
Sure.
And also your retirement. You know, have a plan in place. If you do have to access it, have a think about, okay, well, where am I going to try and make that up if possible at some point in time? So I suppose the general takeaway from that is just understand the ramifications if you access it, but don't not access it if you desperately need to. It's there for that. You've got to be unemployed also to get that.
Sure.
And then reduce your spending if you're able to at this point in time. Some of us just can't. There's not much more room to take away. So on the flip side, I mean, on one side, you can look at your budget where you can make savings. And then on the other side, you might be able to say, well, what can I turn my hand to make a little bit of extra coin at this point in time, if that is available? There's a lot of companies that are, or businesses, small business operators that are thinking of how they can retool their businesses or retool their offering to, if not just get themselves out there for the recovery when it comes, because it will come.
Of course.
So just thinking about your income potential there too, managing your debt. This is really important at this point in time because, you know, you can call up your bank and get repayments put on hold. You can switch to different, be it fixed or variable, of course. You can look for better interest rates. You can refinance. You can request a pause. Think about your credit cards if you've got that too. Having that communication with your lenders is really important at this point in time. Really important.
It's about, I'm just saying, it's about using your entrepreneurial skills, thinking outside the square, you know what I mean? There's a young brother here in Cairns, and I'll mention his name, big shout-out, Robert Toombs, and he's a welder, and he's now welding gym sets in his garage because people are at home, and they're working out at home now instead of working out in the gym, and he's selling it at a very cheap price, and, you know, he's just thinking outside the square.
Yeah, see, that's why Barry is fantastic. And I think, I know I'm digressing here, but I think we're going to see some really cool innovations come out of this period.
New industries.
New industries. And just I noticed even from my local, I live on a farm and I've got across the road a fruit farm, and they're now doing more online deliveries, and all these things are happening. They're actually really, really good. So thinking like your mate has and changing tack could well be a fantastic opportunity to last long term. I think a lot of these things will stay with us.
Sure.
I know I'm talking to a lot of people who are working from home that never really want to go back to an office.
Yes, exactly.
Although some people are saying, hey, I'm sick of working at the dining table. It kills every meal night for me. But, you know, so it's a real social technology change for us. As well at this point in time.
And some people have been being more productive at home than they are at work anyway, which is great for the company.
This is true, and I think the work from home, what we know about flexible work and being able to work from home, it's tended to always be a woman's thing that they've done around childcare and things like that. And we know that men have been historically more likely to be rejected when they've applied to
hunter and gatherers.
Suggested, hey, can I work from home? And that's a real shame. So hopefully, because of this, many of us can prove, hey, this can work, we can make it work, and this is how it's working, that we'll see more businesses allow men to work from home or allow families to have that balance. You know, all of these things are really important when raising a family.
Look, you make some very beautiful points, and look, thank you very much for sharing. I've got to move on, but more power to all our beautiful women out there. This is your world as well, and look, lead from the front, my sisters. Thank you very much, Bianca. You take care and keep doing what you're doing. Keep in touch, and more importantly, stay safe.
Thank you. Lovely to talk to you.
Bye-bye, dear. A beautiful yarn there. That's Bianca Huttridge. Her name is Hazelman, and she's the founder CEO of the Women's Financial Progress in regard to the work that she's living in, the space she's living in regard to the Financy Women's Index. So, Too Deadly, yarn up strong here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with the Bully and Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BB and Bumper Group Media, 98.7 FM, and we go via NERS, National News Radio Service. So I want to hear what you're going to say. You want 1-800-422-416. Now, we're going to catch up with Yana. Professor Dinesh Kumar is a biomedical, and he's expert or signals experts in the School of Engineering at Remit University. Limitations of Bluetooth contact tracing apps such as COVID Safe and the impact on uptake. So a very important conversation online. Professor Dinesh, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Where are you based, sir?
And Cold Melbourne, you must be in the warm Cairns right now.
Yes, we're in a pair of shorts and singlet on talking at the moment, having a good old chat with you. Just lovely up here in far north Queensland.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, I was just thinking that going from Melbourne to Cairns, not only does the weather change, the name of my university changes.
What's the name of it? Is it Riga Rimit?
No, it is RMIT, as Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology. So okay. We call it RMIT. But if your listeners prefer calling it Rimit, I think that's okay.
Well, okay, that's fantastic. Thank you for the flexibility. All right, now, hello? Very important space you're working in. Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
Professor? No, lost professor. We'll try and get professor back. That's Professor Dinesh Kumar. And look, lost him online. We're going to come back and have a chat to him, get him back online. Limitations of Bluetooth contact tracing apps such as COVID Safe and the impact on uptake. So there may be a negative side to it, but we're going to find out and have that conversation. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with Bully Run, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray, Finn and Curry. And live from your First Nation radio station here in Cairns, that's BBM Bumper Brit Media, 98.7 FM and Cross Nation News. All right, we're going to catch up a yarn there and see if the professor is on the line. Professor Dinesh, you there? No, you're not there. We'll try and get him back again. Stay tuned. You're up to your daily program, National Talk Black. All right. We've got to put it through to the Studio A desk. That's what we're looking for. And I think it's just on hold at the moment, but we'll try again. Thank you very much. Professor Dinesh, you there? Hello?
Yes, I'm there. We lost you for a moment.
Yeah, there was a virus on the phone, but it's all good. Look, we are living in a different world at the moment. And look, the government has been pushing COVID safe.
One day I'll come to Cairns. I've never been to Cairns.
And the kettle's on, so come and have a cuppa. For real, yes, and COVID safe, that's upon us at the moment regarding the app. Tell me about your thoughts about, limitations of Bluetooth contact tracing apps such as COVID safe and the impact on the uptake of that.
Okay, to begin with, I must congratulate the government for actually having started this. This was originally started in Singapore, and it's a technology, coming to terms in such a sudden way, and I think that is a very clever thing to do. So, one brief about Bluetooth in itself. Bluetooth are these invisible waves which are everywhere. They are electromagnetic radiation, and they go through walls and glass and space and everything. So, that is a good thing about them, but that also makes a bad thing about them. And the bad thing, the good thing is that if two of us are, walking on the street and we are close to each other, it'll record it. And if one of us is found to be having the virus, it'll then go on to the database and it'll say, hey, this guy, you went close to a person with the disease, which is great.
Yep.
The bad thing is that it goes through glass and windows and cars and walls and ceiling and roof, which means that if you are living in an apartment or sitting in one car and there's another person in the other car, it will recognize the two people to be together, which is then a problem, because what it does is that it two people have not been in the same space. We've not breathed the same air. We've not touched the same surface. But the system will say, you are together, so you got to go and get yourself tested, you got to get yourself isolated, and whatever else. And that's a lot of cost to the government and inconvenience to the people.
So it's giving correct information, but then false information at the same time.
Hello?
You there? Professor? Wow. We just lost Professor. Deep in conversation, we'll try and get Professor back, Professor Dinesh Kumar, and the limitations of Bluetooth contact tracing apps such as COVID Safe and the impact on the uptake. And so he's talking about is what I'm picking up, and we'll get him back and continue the conversation. But he's talking about the pluses in regarding the COVID Safe, but also the minuses. And so there seems like a bit of dilemma in regard to his concept or his idea of the COVID safe. So, and the government and everybody's been talking about COVID safe, and we can contain this virus by using this app. But here we have a professor who's talking about the downside of it. So that's the conversation that's going on at the moment. Murray lost him again here on radio, so we'll try again and get him back online. And that's the Professor Dinesh Kumar, and he's a biomedical and he's a signals expert. He's a biomedical signals expert in the School of Engineering and RIMIT University. And he did mention they got a different naming to RIMIT. And we in far north Queensland, hillbillies up north here, run with their terminology rather than RIMIT. He's never heard that before. Well, there you go. Maybe I'm wrong in regarding the pronunciation, but do acknowledge that he is a professor. Fantastic. Have your say, Mob, 1-800-422-416. Yana with Bawley Run, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry with your daily program. It's National Talk Black. Stay tuned, 1-800-422-416.
There's a fire burning deep in me, and I'm standing at the edge of time. Far away on a distant plain, waiting for the sun to shine. I feel the world coming down on me. I try to run from reality, like a boat out on a dried up sea. There's an emptiness inside.
Yeah, that daily track is Going Home, but I'm not going home. I'm staying with you, Mob. This is Going Home, Jason Lee Scott. But you're Yana with Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go by NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. We'll try and get back in touch with Professor Dinesh Kumar, who's having a daily conversation regarding the limitation of Bluetooth contact tracing apps such as COVID Safe and the impact on uptake. But we are also now, well, we're now going to take up a yarn with Violet Ruumilis Otis, AM, that is, CEO of Settlement Service International. And SSI calls that discriminatory visa approach to COVID 19 and stimulus packages. Have that yarn on the line. We are at Violet. Violet, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you for coming to the program. Where are you based, Violet?
In Sydney, New South Wales.
Okay, we're sunny North Queensland here in Cairns. Thank you for coming to the program.
It's rainy and cold here today.
Is that right? Sunshine here, blue skies and tropical, nice. Listen, a very important conversation here, but SSI, who you're the CEO of Settlement Services International, are calling it a discriminatory visa approach to COVID-19 stimulus packages. Please explain. You there? Hello? Violet? Oh, problem with the phones. Virus with the phones. We'll try and get Violet back online. Listen, Bob, we're a professional company here at Bummer Bipper and want you to know that. Yeah, good go. Murray, muck it up big time here. It's something going on with the phones, but being adaptable, that's what it's all about. We'll fix them up. Give them a call, 1-800-422-416.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trek.
1-800-422-416. And I'm dreaming.
Tribe to
Desert to the Sea here in tropical North Queensland. That's Jason Lee Scott. You're live here with the ball. You're on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Curry with your daily program, National Talk Black. We're going to try again with Violet on the line. Violet, good morning. You there?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Trevor.
I'm saying we've got a virus in the phone, but we'll get past it. Yes, COVID-19 is upon us. Now, listen, you're the CEO of Settlement Services International, and SSI calls out discriminatory visa approach to COVID-19 stimulus packages. Please explain. Thank you.
Well, we have seen for the first time in many, many years, Trevor, the government actually, with opposition, working together, addressing not just the economy, but remembering that we live in a society and looking at the most vulnerable. And so there were a lot of good things that came out of the stimulus packages. But what we're very disappointed about is that there's discrimination around visa type. So we have something like 2.5 million temporary visa holders in Australia, people who come legally and work and assist the economy. And many are international students, or they're people on temporary visas who set up their own businesses and start a life here, you know, have a family, pay their taxes and employ other Australians. And then, of course, we have asylum seekers who are on bridging visas waiting to hear the result or outcome of their application.
And they're not receiving the JobKeeper payments?
No, there's something like a million now temporary visa holders and, of course, asylum seekers on bridging visas who don't receive JobKeeper, job seeker at all.
A case of no man's land.
Yeah. No, nothing. They have no income. Many have lost their jobs because of COVID, like many others. The government's response was go home. To those of you, you know, go home if you can't support yourself. And we know, of course,
wiping their hands from the situation.
Yeah, because there's many, many who their families have been impacted in their countries of origin. That could be from India or Asian countries or Europe, and they can't really go back. And the travel, of course,
the borders
is very expensive
are closed.
Now. Yeah, that's right. It's really tough. Now, the government can help repatriate people back, but the truth is that we also, our economy needs these people. And then if you look at very vulnerable, like asylum seekers, they really have no capacity to support themselves. And many are at risk of homelessness. And really, you have kids going to bed hungry.
Well, because of the closing of the borders and closing of the country, which happened probably about 5-6 weeks ago. So what you're saying is visa holders are still in a space where nothing's being done.
Yeah, so what they have to do is rely on charities.
Yes.
Those who were, because many are working in industries that have been closed down, in retail, hospitality, you know, those types of things. So and, you know, there's many others, as we know. We saw those long queues in front of Centrelink when we had the first shutdowns, and they can't compete. It's very hard for them to compete in the jobs are available. So, you know, it is a very difficult situation.
So, Bola, when you look at SSI, Settlement Services International, so you're the spokesperson for these people. Who are you communicating with in regarding ministers and what have you?
Well, we've spoken to many other national approach. We've spoken to organisations that are peak bodies, Australian Council of Social Service, the Migration Council of Australia, the Federation of Ethnic Community Councils, and the Settlement Council of Australia. So there's some great peaks, with Refugee Council, of course, the lead. And we've sent letters to the Prime Minister and to the relevant ministers.
What sort of responses are you getting?
Well, the response was that putting Australians first, that it's a big cost to the budget, and that really temporary visa holders should go home. And in terms of asylum seekers, it is we're waiting to try and get a response from the Department of Immigration as well about this very unusual situation. Mm. It's a global pandemic, and it's certainly not through the fault of people losing their jobs.
Exactly.
And they really have no option if they can't get income support. And it is really a grim situation for those families.
Well, like I said, the arms were open in regard to these beautiful people coming to our country legally, using the visas, doing dotting the I's, crossing the T's, doing everything right, and then now it's virtually a care factor zero, so to speak, is what I'm picking up.
Yep, and we have to remember that, many temporary migrants make a positive socio-economic contribution to Australia.
Sure.
They're skilled, or, as we see, international students. And they really do, impact on workforce in a positive way, pay income tax and other taxes.
Yes. So if they were doing everything right and helping our country, survive into the future and employment and productivity and what have you, so now COVID-19 is upon us, well, if you don't want them here, if you ain't going to pay them a job seeker payment, so to speak, and a lot of Australians probably think that they shouldn't get it, and some people think they should get it, well, if not that, then what's plan B? Help them get home, if that's the case, you know what I mean?
That's
or look
saying,
after them
like
while
help
they're here.
Repatriate. Yeah,
yes.
Help those who can go back. But don't forget, Trevor, like in 6 months or 7 months, when our borders reopen, if that's August, September, and,
yeah.
We hear from government that the economy requires to open borders and needs migrants coming in. We're a country of immigrants, and we know the story of other than our First Nations people.
Thank you.
All the rest have travelled to this country. And we will need these people again. What messages are giving it to the international community about Australia? Because there's Australians, expatriates stuck in other countries. Don't we expect that those countries, as their hosts, will care for them in this global pandemic?
Exactly.
Of course we do.
Yes.
And it goes two ways.
It's
really important.
Exactly. So what we're looking for is more conversation or more support or engagement in regard to these people that we're talking about, and if not, have plan B and support them to get home or look after them while they're here. It's either yay or nay. It's either one A or B, isn't it?
That's right. You saw some of the state governments and territory governments step up and say, all right, we're going to contribute something.
Mm.
Tasmania did it, Victoria, Queensland, which is wonderful. New South Wales, my own state, unfortunately has yet to contribute anything, which is disappointing. And again, we've been advocating. A number of community organisations have written letters to the Premier saying, New South Wales as a state benefits greatly from tourism and from, these temporary visa holders when they come in and work. Surely it is a time now
exactly.
to support them, the basics, so that people can live with dignity and children can be taken care of and people not become homeless.
Well, you look at COVID-19.
Going into winter.
Exactly, going into winter.
COVID-19, that's right, Trevor.
Exactly.
People, overcrowded environments because they have to move in with friends or
isolation, 1.5 metres, not happening.
Yeah, it's not happening, that's right. And then a lot of kids who don't have, we might have we see families of five or seven who've got one iPad between the whole family.
Exactly.
How can you do homeschooling? How can you support the kids to continue their education? So there's a lot of factors.
A lot of factors,
mind
a lot
you,
of potholes in regarding the journey ahead, a lot of potholes.
There are. I just want to say that a lot of positive, wonderful Australians have stepped up. There's great, high, public known
and hats off to them.
Chefs who've been cooking meals, Colombo Social, Oz Harvest. They've all, delivering meals. Uber's offered us 2,000 trips where we can help send food packages. So,
beautiful.
Your ordinary Aussies are really stepping up and doing some great work, which is
well,
wonderful.
The government need to step up as well. I'm just saying the government needs to step up as well, I mean, when you look at the so-called job seeker, job keeper payments, this country has been turned upside down in COVID-19. So the government, fantastic, has come to the table regarding job keeper payments. It's not a hand out, it's a hand up while we're in this space. But if you look at the people who hold visas, well, they are, charity starts at home. but this is their home at the moment. You know what I mean? So they should be supported as well, in, if not in the JobKeeper payments, then if not a flight home or feed them, at least house them, whatever.
Yeah, something to help.
Well, this conversation, of course, goes across the nation, and governments do listen to our conversation. So this is our input regarding your movement there, Violet. So thank you very much for coming to the program, sister.
Thank you for your interest, Trevor.
All the best to you. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, very sad situation there. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Murray going to sign off here. We're going to get back in the hot seat again for the local program. So special COVID-19 program, your local mob here in Cairns. Bubba, mob, stay online. Stay tuned to BBM 98.7 FM for the mob across the country. Look, you can also tune in via the net as well if you want to listen to that conversation as well. Don't forget that. But thank you for your company. We are in a different world. COVID-19, abide by the rules and let's keep it at bay, the so-called virus, and by doing what we need to do in regards to rules and laws and regulations, we can get things back in order in regard to normality. We'll try and catch up again with Professor Dinesh Kumar that got cut off there, but it was a very important conversation regarding the COVID Safe app that's happening and talking about the impact on the uptake of that. So we'll have that conversation. But Murray, going to sign off for you, Mob. Thank you very much for your company. Local Mob, stay tuned. This is Trendy Trev here, Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. But otherwise, look, take care. Look after yourself. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. And also stay safe. Too deadly.
Across Australia, this is Callan Murray with the National Indigenous News. Advocates say the federal government needs to step up in its role to end homelessness. The comment follows an online forum on the topic this week, which looked at government's response to homelessness during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Australian Alliance to End Homelessness says, with the pandemic ongoing, there is no better time than now to address homelessness and work on long-term solutions. CEO of the Alliance, David Pearson, says there has been some good work done across the country by states, but the federal government also has a role to play.
So the federal government has sort of done their response in terms of, you know, the job seeker payment and the JobKeeper, those sort of really big projects. When it comes to housing and homelessness, we're really saying that there needs to be a housing stimulus plan. There needs to be intensive to build that additional housing. But in the shorter term, we think that the Commonwealth has a role to play in providing additional support on top of what they already do to provide that extra housing and support, to better measure and prioritise the number of rough sleepers, ensure that the housing goes to those most in need. So, and of course, the health response, making sure that the health system is better connected to the homelessness system. So all of those things the Commonwealth has a really strong role in, and we think that the Commonwealth really needs to step up in that role.
The Northern Territory's Chief Minister says he will raise the prospect of reopening the NT's remote